Hi, we're so happy you're here, and we are so excited to tell you about an awesome wedding planning resource that we have created just for you.
In March of 2021, we launched the Big Wedding Planning Masterclass, a digital course designed with you in mind. Any budget, any type of wedding, at any phase of wedding planning.
We spent a year creating this interactive course. It includes unlimited access, all of our templates, spreadsheets, timelines, checklists, and pro tips. Everything is downloadable and customizable, and we walk you through it step by step with video tutorials and screen shares.
We threw it all into this course. There's no way you won't get something out of it. We're so sure, we've included a 30-day money-back guarantee.
We're so excited to share this course with you and to help you plan your wedding our way.
So go to www.thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com for more information and to sign up and to purchase. The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen. Learn.
Hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a podcast for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Christy Matthews, and I am recording today without Michelle. She is in the middle of a cross-country move and settling into new digs in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I wanted to read a quick email we got from a listener in Melbourne, Australia. We're loving all of the listener feedback that we're getting from the UK and Australia. Y'all are podcast lovers out there, and we love you for it. So this bride emailed to let us know that she just listened. I'll read it. I just listened to your latest podcast. You mentioned the idea of a wedding version of Cards Against Humanity, and it already exists. And then she left a link, which I'll include in the show notes, through offbeatbride.com. And it looks like it's called Cards About Matrimony, which I think is hilarious. So definitely I'm going to check that out. And then she said, I'm loving your podcast. I'd love to hear more about choosing a venue and a caterer, as that is what I'm in the middle of organizing right now. Love, Claire. Well, Claire, your wish is our command. And today I am interviewing a vendor professional that is firmly grounded in catering and venue operation, my friend Beth Albright. Beth Albright is the director of sales and business development for Food Glorious Food, which is a big catering company out here in Dallas. She's also a certified wedding consultant, and she's a member of NACE and AACWP, ILEA, and SWP. And those are all professional networking groups for wedding industry peeps. She's got a bunch of awards for being a favorite caterer, and she's just a local favorite for everyone here in the Dallas-Fort Worth and North Texas area that works with her because she's super fun and really knowledgeable, and she's been doing this for over 10 years, and she knows what's going on. So I'm so happy to talk to her today. I'm going to interview her about how couples can best pick a caterer, best choose their menu, and then also the venue side of things. When you're choosing a venue, sometimes it comes with a caterer, but sometimes it doesn't. And when you do a walkthrough, your initial walkthrough at a venue, there's just a ton of questions to ask, and it might be a little bit overwhelming because, as you know, choosing a venue is the biggest and most, well, the most important step you're going to make in wedding planning because it informs so many of your other decisions. So stoked to talk to Beth Albright today, and I'll include all of her links and information in the show notes. So without further ado, here we go. All right, Beth Albright, thank you for for having me in your office today.
Thank you for joining me.
It is a little warm in here, actually. I'm
gonna take yes, it is. Off, well, and it's all blustery and rainy outside, too.
It's so gross outside.
Miserable.
I drove here, and it took about an hour, but the whole time I was, like, white-knuckling it because every freeway is, like, flooded
packed
on the sides.
And flooded, yep.
And it was pouring all the way out by me. It's supposed to rain until 6 p.m.
Is it really?
You guys, it's December in Dallas, so we're actually not supposed to have thunderstorms anymore.
No, it should be 80 degrees,
yes,
usually.
It should be. So I got out, like, the rain boots today and made the trek. But I'm here in Beth's office, which is a larger conglomerate, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We're in the Culinaire International, which is our parent company.
Okay. And your Food Glorious Food,
the off-premise division, off-premise catering division of Culinaire.
Okay.
Yes.
And your specific role is directly tied to several of the venues that Culinaire...
Yes. So my official title is Director of Sales and Business Development, which is a fancy way of saying that I handle all of the off-premise catering events, and then I find new venues for us to be the exclusive caterer for. So once I find a new venue and we negotiate the contracts and get it all situated, I usually run that venue for a couple of years, getting it up and going, and then handing it off to somebody else and taking over another one.
So you're not always in the office dealing with...
Very rarely in the office,
yes. And you do the catering side of, or at least beginning the proposals before you hand it off to somebody else. Is that right? Or do you see the clients?
No, I do from start to finish.
Okay.
So I find the business, do their proposal maybe 8 different times.
Yeah.
That they change it and change it and change it. Book the business and then plan it with them, timeline and floor plan, and then
I'm there. Stick with them.
Stick with them through the very end, and then I'm there at the event.
Wowza.
Very exciting.
And then, so we'll talk about the catering at the second part of this, but for the actual venue hunt, as it were, we have gotten several listeners, and thank you. I think Claire from Australia,
I think
you sent one in. We have a following in Australia.
That's awesome.
But to talk more about the specifics of finding a venue, because Michelle and I have mentioned many times, including the budget episode and the timeline episode, which are our biggest, like, teaching, like, this is the information episodes, about how at the beginning of the planning process it can seem like, oh, we want to talk about flowers and, like, what color my bridesmaid's shoes are going to be, when the real thing you have to focus on are a few things: your budget, your guest count, and then when you have those sort of figured out, you need to start looking for venues, because that venue is going to inform basically every other decision you make, starting with your date.
Yes.
So when you see couples and they have, like, they're at the beginning of the process, like, they've been engaged, let's say, 2 months, and they want a wedding in about a year, what do you think they should know or have definitely thought about and considered before they even start Googling venues?
Yes. You've touched on a few of the items. Date. And I would suggest, if at all possible, being flexible with that date. I mean, maybe knowing a range of, I want September and October on a Saturday. That way you leave yourself open to finding the right venue, and all of your vendors who may or may not be available on the different days. That way you have more flexibility there. So date. Guest count is a big one. I've worked with venues that are gigantic, and, you know, we can seat 1,000 people. The venue I work with currently can seat only about 130. So if you come
that's
in...
That's deck.
And that's deck, yeah.
We will, I'll include all these links on the website, too, so you can, on the show notes, so you can see which venues she's referencing, too.
Yeah, and Deck on Dragon is an incredibly popular venue. It just is a more intimate space. I can stand about 250, 300 people between the two levels. So when I have, which is going to be the next thing I say I would love for couples to know, when I have couples who are good with chef performance, little plate station, you know, displays where it's just a 7-inch plate and a fork and you can stand at a highboy table or sit on lounge furniture and mingle around, then we can get up to, you know, 250, 300 people. But if they come in and have their heart set on a
plated dinner with a dance floor right in the middle of all the dining tables, then guest count definitely changes at my venue as well as many others. So knowing your guest count and then knowing the type of food service style that you want, because that will dictate what can fit in the space, and it will also dictate the type of staff you need, the rentals you may need. It fluctuates your price point quite a bit.
So, and even if you don't know all of that, at least knowing for sure what you don't want.
Yes.
Or like a couple, let's call them like hard stops for you. Like,
yes.
We definitely do not want a reception style reception, which is the like roving kind of more like a cocktail party.
Right.
Or we definitely want our ceremony to also be at deck.
Yes.
Because that means that we have to utilize two separate spaces. And where are the guests going to go when you're flipping the space? So you can't, Beth, you know, you would be the person to tell them, like, okay, well, then your max is 130.
Right.
Because everybody has to go from the ceremony space downstairs in this case while we make the ceremony space a dinner area. So there's a lot to think about. But even if you can only come up with a couple things you and your partner agree on, that's better than nothing.
Yes.
Just calling, like.
Yes, absolutely. And also in terms of looking for a venue, at least in Dallas, there are so many shapes and sizes and styles that narrowing down your vision in terms of, do you want modern, do you want rustic, do you want warehouse, do you want a traditional ballroom, will, I think, also make your list, pare down your list quite a bit. If you're just looking online at pictures, you can go ahead and cut out half of the ones that don't.
There's no point, and it wastes everyone's time to see a warehouse if you're set on a ballroom.
Exactly.
Especially if you're from an area, which is most big cities at this point, that have many, many options, or a greater metroplex like Dallas, which has Fort Worth and Denton and, you know, north, south, east, west. We can go everywhere. You go half an hour out and there's like ridiculous barns.
Yep.
And ranches and wineries out here, which is still crazy for me to wrap my brain around. Okay, so that's your the main points for before you even call someone like Food Glorious Food. Okay, then the next question is, what questions would you, if you were like just going to put it out there for ease for everyone, what questions should a couple ask when they're at, so they've scheduled it with you, they've got like six site visits and you are one of them, but you know they're like comparison shopping.
Sure.
What should they ask you?
I would start with what is included with the building rental. Does it include tables, chairs, linens, china, silver, glassware, any other lounge furniture? Does it cover the valet, the security, the staff? Because every venue is going to be different in their building rental fee.
On that note, what are the main differences then with a venue that has on-site or contracted, you know, totally contracted catering versus someone that says, and what's so great about this venue is we'll let you bring in any caterer you want. There's pros and cons to both, but in terms of a first visit, what are the main things to think about?
Well, and I would actually kind of make three categories there. There's the type of venue like a hotel or a country club that have their own in-house catering through the hotel. So it's not another caterer that is the exclusive. It is the Four Seasons catering. So a lot of times that type of venue has a food and beverage minimum to hit, and then there's no building rental fee. And of course, the hotel is going to own all their own tables, chairs, linens, china, silver, glassware. But you may be hitting a higher food and beverage minimum than if you were going to an off-premise location. The second kind of venue thought is what we are when we, as Food Glorious Food Catering, are exclusive, hired to be exclusive at an off-premise venue. So that's a Deck on Dragon, Arlington Hall, a warehouse space that may or may not actually have a kitchen on site. So they hire a caterer to come in, and that caterer is responsible for bringing in tables, chairs, linens, china, silver, glassware. So you pay the building rental fee to the owner of the venue, and then the caterer handles everything else for you. But it's not like the hotel and the country club, because you're still having to rent so many things.
Right. You just don't have to do it all yourself as the bride and groom.
Exactly. And then the other type of venues, what you were saying, where they have a catering list. And that's really when I would ask your venue, so who's my point person the day of? For example, when you go to a Food Glorious Food exclusive venue, I'm your point person the day of. I'm representing the venue and the food and beverage and the staff and the whole shebang, trying to make it as one-stop shopping as possible. A venue that has a catering list, and you can choose from these five caterers, or you can bring in grandma from down the road, their person that is their venue manager may not be on site. They may say, well, we unlock the doors,
turn on the lights
and leave, which is a terrifying thought. We were at a venue a couple of years ago that was like that, where we were on the catering list, and the roof started leaking all over, pouring down, leaking.
Oh, my God.
And they, of course, turned to our staff and our event manager, thinking that we are with the venue because we're the staff at the venue, to try and stop the roof from caving in. So it's, I would say, a question of who is going to be my point person the day of. Who's responsible for what? If you guys own all your own tables, chairs, and linens, are you setting it up? If I am renting it and bringing it in, am I responsible for setting it up? Do you have a staff that's doing that? Really determining the responsibilities of your team, your venue team. And then what is included with the building rental rate, which because a lot of times, especially with off-premise venues, you'll see an additional charge for the valet, an additional charge for security, an additional charge because those are all different companies.
They require it, but it's, you could shop around a little bit, but it's also just one more thing you have to do. So the pro also with even a vendor list is that the person that's giving you the tour should be able to answer these questions for you about the, like, their five favorite caterers.
Yes.
And maybe even give you some hints about who maybe fits your vision the best. Maybe check them out first before you start getting proposals. And I think a pro of having a contracted caterer is that, well, there's a lot of them that you obviously know what you're doing, but the physical logistics of the space, like,
absolutely.
You're an expert.
Loading and
how big the doors are.
Yep,
and, we know we can fit 50 chairs in that elevator.
Well, the Hall of State is a prime example, which is a historic venue out at Fair Park. And it was built in 1836, something insane. And the elevator is too small to hold an 8-foot table. It can barely hold a 6-foot table because it was built so long ago. So
when people were short.
When people were smaller. And so everything has to be hand-carried up all of these gigantic marble stairs, which we, being the exclusive caterer there, our team has it down to a fine art.
Right.
Whereas if you were to ask a caterer to come in as a one-off, it's going to be just a nightmare for them to try and work under those situations.
Yeah, so it's the physical aspect of it. Also, the time that it takes, which then informs the staffing. If you know it takes 2 hours, and we can do that with a 4-person staff, and then we'll have those same 4 people come back at the end of the night, or they'll be there the whole time, rather than some venues we've talked about in San Francisco that are like working restaurants or museums and they don't close down until 5 and then your wedding starts at 6.
Yep.
You have to pay vendors triple to do in an hour what they usually want to take 3 hours to do. Not to mention dealing with like where vendors park and load in and not wanting your guests to see a bunch of crew members going in a different exit. So if you want everything to be as like, say you're a couple that money, you have like a pretty good budget and you just want this whole experience of wedding planning to be easy and the wedding day to go like as smooth as possible. If that were the circumstances, would you say then you should, if you have your choice, hire, get a venue that has a contracted caterer or an on-site?
Absolutely. We have, the way that Food Glorious Food manages our events is there's the me that plans it with the client and then create the event order and give it to our event captain who is dedicated to our specific venues. So like we were saying, knows the logistics perfectly of those venues. But that is the person that is there actually physically executing everything, making those in the moment changes when it starts raining or when the air conditioning is blowing on the mother of the bride or when the bride decides that she wants to postpone the champagne toast for 30 minutes. It's that point person that is there physically making everything happen, communicating it to the rest of the staff, the photographer, the DJ, because you need that point person so the bride and grooms don't have to do that.
Right. Which leads me to my next question is venues that require a wedding planner versus venues that don't. The venues that you manage don't officially hire or demand that you hire a wedding planner. What's your take on that?
If everyone could please hire a wedding planner, a good trained wedding planner, that would be amazing. Again, just to have that one point person that is the decision maker for everything. So it's not getting 50 emails from bride, 50 emails from bride's mom, 50 emails from groom's mom, 50
emails. You're not getting
yes,
that.
Exactly. Right. And then also the day, again, the day of, so that you're not having to, I'm not having to bother the bride
asking questions.
Or if something is going wrong, the wedding planner, you know, and our crew can handle it. Technically, for Food Glory's Food, all of our sales managers, myself, and the my coworkers are all certified wedding consultants. So it is somewhat of a selling point for our venues that if you don't have the budget to hire a wedding planner, we can run your ceremony rehearsal, run your ceremony, and then be your point person for your vendors that day of. But we would not be somebody that's planning anything outside of the venue with you.
Right. And in terms of setup on the day, you can do what you can, but since you're running the food and beverage, which is the biggest element to set up, alphabetizing 200 escort cards or tying ribbons around menus might be, if we can do it, we will, but
you need a good posse of cousins and aunts and uncles to be there to do that for you if you don't have the vendors to do that. Yes.
Right, and then thinking about the end of the night as well. If you can't afford a wedding planner, Michelle and I talk a lot about just scraping together some extra cash just to do a day of, month of, because that's much better than nothing. But the end of the night, the caterer and the venue are closing up for their part of the wedding day.
Right.
Cleaning up, breaking down tables and chairs, pulling linens, turning off lights, sweeping, and getting the kitchen or whatever kitchen they were able to set up fully cleaned out, emptying trashes. So who's going to go pick up the bride's high heels that she left under the sweetheart table and make sure that all the gifts and cards go where they're going to? It's just a more chaotic hour at the end of the night. And it really does pretty much take just an hour because everyone busts their ass
to get
it all done. But you have a team taking care of their team.
Right. We always say you take out what you bring in.
Right. And with weddings, Michelle and I, we've mentioned so many times how you're going to have like a corner of your room or a whole guest room in your house that is just filled with all the crap you're going to bring to your wedding. Very important crap that you want back at the end of the night. But, you know, a 4-foot by 3-foot seating chart on a mirror, that's heavy and somebody has to remove that. You know, I did at Deck, I had it like, I don't know, chained to one of those like balconies you have there and made sure that that got into the mother of the bride's car at the end of the night. So when you're looking at venues and you're asking all these questions, ask them about the hours that you get for a deal, but also if that includes strike at the end of the night or if they're just like, oh, just get, you know, take your stuff and go and we'll handle everything, which is sometimes what a hotel might do. But for venues that might have another event the next day, you might have a time limit there. So that's another thing to consider with venues.
Yes.
Okay. So on to the catering side, which we're in this unique position with Beth that she's doing both. We talk about a little bit how everything's negotiable with vendors and that, you know, a vendor might always say no when you try to negotiate and that's like, oh, that's the worst they can say. But we've recommended before like ways that you might try to get an extra hour, maybe if you're not doing your engagement session there, or maybe if they already have shivari chairs, you know that they're at the venue, try to get those thrown in because you don't need something else. But basically, we I don't negotiate for my clients unless they're full planning. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know from your standpoint, when you're sitting across the desk and you're working out the nuts and bolts with a couple, they've booked the venue, they've booked your catering. Mm-hmm. What like wiggle room is there, or how is it most productive mm-hmm. to kind of ask to adjust things or get creative when it comes to the actual menu and food?
Well, twofold answer on that. The first part of the money negotiating, I think that's one good thing about a off-premise caterer versus a hotel or a country club more corporate caterer is that we do have flexibility with our menus and with our menu pricing, whereas, you know, somebody that's coming from a nationwide corporate, you know, Wolfgang Puck or, mm-hmm. you know, somebody that's, you know, it's, they have corporate menu set, they have pricing set no matter where you are, what you're doing. Four Seasons has to hit this minimum on a Saturday yeah. in April. So off-premise catering, we have a lot more flexibility with that. So from a negotiating point of view, I will tell you that one of the most frustrating things is when we show somebody the menu price and their response is, instead of $15, will you give it to me for $12?
Right. I want everything that's right. listed here for less money. And I get that all the time.
We always are like, do you do that at a restaurant?
Right.
Like when you're looking at the menu, do you say to the waiter, I want this, but take $3 off? Like,
right.
That's not
how it works.
How it works.
Yeah.
It's our cost estimates for off-premise catering show the food, the beverage, the equipment rental, so table, chairs, linens, china, silver, glassware, and the staff.
And it's all broken down.
All broken down.
So you can see
line item by line item.
This is per hour per staff
yes.
member. You need 10.
And it's all broken. I mean, it's broken down for every fork, every glass, so that, and we have several different rental companies at all different price points. So you can see if you change from a buffet to a plated dinner, how your service fees change and your equipment rentals change. So the first place that I, again, being a food and beverage person, I work on commission of food and beverage. So I would like to try and keep that money where it is. And I am more able to, like, we own 800 place settings.
Okay.
With Food Glory's food. So if it's, you know, a matter of just overall budget, then I might be able to give them our china, silver, and glassware at a discounted rate or donated.
Mm-hmm.
So their overall budget has gone down, but the food and beverage, we didn't have to cut anything out of that.
Right. So something that's like a standard. So one way
right.
to say, if they say like, we love this, but we just can't afford
right.
this quite high, maybe take out your fancy chargers
right.
or the like
exactly.
cut glassware that you wanted and go full standard.
Exactly.
And if you ask about it and you present it that way,
mm-hmm.
You might get a little more bang for your buck
because
yes. it's just like, well, if you're okay with standard.
Well, and I always tell people also that certain times of the year I have more flexibility with being
Ooh.
Able to adjust my menu prices and equipment rentals and things. We are here in Texas incredibly slow July, August, some of September because of the weather. January and February is another time. So I would... at Deck on Dragon give building rental, I mean, we already are
discounts.
Yeah, we already cost less just normally to on the prime months versus the off months. But I could negotiate even further down with food and beverage, with donating of equipment, things like
or
that.
Get
on
an extra hour.
Exactly.
Or, okay.
Because we just need business so much during that time that we have more flexibility. In terms of the food and beverage kind of negotiating of the costs, the first place I usually aim is in your bar.
I was just going to say that. So that's the difference between like limited or also premium.
Yeah. So
okay.
we have three tiers, house, premium, and ultra, that are the different brands at different price points. And then within those tiers, you can do the full bar that would have liquor, the soft bar that's just beer, wine, and champagne. Could do a consumption bar, which I would never recommend.
That's a good note.
Yeah.
So better to just pay for the hours and know what you're
yes.
going to be paying for
do
at the end.
Do the per person per hour package.
Okay.
Unless you just absolutely know that the groom side doesn't drink at all. Like
okay.
it's a religious thing and half of my guests aren't going to drink.
Okay.
Then you'd be safe. But usually with weddings, the consumption bar is a dangerous beast because people are celebrating. It's free to them. They're going
right.
to drink more than normal, and you're being charged the cash bar prices per drink, as opposed to when you do a per person per hour package, it works out to about $4.75 a drink.
Right. That's better. Someone's going to drink the like house Chardonnay all night and somebody else is going to drink Jack and Coke.
Right.
But it works out. But another crappy thing about the consumption bar, and this is an argument that I use when my couples say, maybe not half the people aren't going to drink, but definitely a quarter. And you're on that edge of like, well, I mean, the worst part is you get a bill after your wedding.
Yep.
That sucks, especially when your wedding is done and you're starting to get your credit card bills and you realize like, oh, shit, we really blew up our budget. And then you get your alcohol bill.
Yep.
It's like, wow. That could be a real bummer.
Well, and yeah. People inevitably are going to question when they see the consumption report.
Sure.
And it is everything that is poured. So somebody orders a glass of wine, takes one sip, sets it down, and decides they want the Jack and Coke instead. You're still getting charged for that they took one sip.
Of course. Of.
And Deck actually has POS screens, so the bartenders can plug in every single drink poured. So there
just
is,
like at a restaurant.
Yeah. So there is. So that is one thing about the consumption bar. There is you really can't fight it. In terms of negotiating, the bar package is somewhere that you can go from full bar to soft bar, and that's going to take you down. You can go from the premium tier to the house tier, and that will take you down.
And there's lots of options in that. Yeah. If you did go to, say, beer and wine, but you wanted, like, kind of cheap house wine, but you know your friends all drink, I don't know, some local...
Yeah, beer, craft
brewery,
beer.
Yeah, then you can, I mean... Your catering company is going to price that appropriately, yep. But you can get creative with what you serve, which I find that couples feel better about that than just serving like the bottom tier house stuff. It's like, yeah, we'll serve all that bottom tier stuff, but we're going to have this fancy specialty cocktail. Can you help us with that? Or we want, one, this expensive beer because...
Well, and we also have a lot of times people want, they'll buy one bottle of... the fancy bourbon for the groom and dad and, that wedding party only knows about it. It's at this one bar just for them. And that way the family members or this, best man and they get there, they can still have that drink that's their drink together, but
so
you have to spend the money for everyone.
Right. How do you guys do, I know hotels sometimes do this if they do like a, you spring for a 4-hour package for an open bar, but during dinner, for that hour and a half during dinner when you know wine is going to be poured tableside and you don't want people getting up to go order, is there...
So if you have wines poured tableside at dinner, then we charge you per bottle of those wines. And with us, you would select the brands that you want to serve in advance, and you would pay for the quantity of bottles in advance. We estimate... how long dinner is going to take, how many people,
Would you get those back at the end of the night?
No. TABC does not allow that magic
and that's,
to happen.
So that's a Texas thing, because I know in California you could. That's something to ask. If we're going to pay for 50 bottles and we don't drink them all, do we get them back? Here, the answer is no.
Correct.
So you guys, your estimate is like down to a science when it comes to that.
But you're not charged for that hour of the bar package.
Got it.
So if you have a 4-hour event, you'd be charged for 3 hours of the bar package and then the per bottle cost of the wines poured tableside.
And then maybe the fourth hour if you wanted to do it that way after dinner.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's another way to, not. I don't know if it's called negotiating, but to get a little bit creative to, once you know your timeline. And like Beth said at the beginning, she's redoing these proposals many times throughout the planning process. So as long as you're in touch with your catering sales manager, and even if it's 4 weeks before your wedding and you say, we want to move this around, it's not like you're taking anything totally off.
Right.
And you might have to stick to a minimum, but you can maybe stretch the bar a little bit or say at 10 o'clock, we want the open bars to totally shut down. And all we want to do is hand people Coors Lights if they ask. That would be something you could work with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, and you were asking about negotiating because our catering contract does, you don't have to pick your menu to book us, but we do agree on a food and beverage minimum. So I'm revising these estimates, 8 times until we get to a food and beverage cost that the client is comfortable with. And so that's what goes on the catering contract as the minimum. So a different philosophy than a hotel which has a $50,000 minimum on this date, no matter who you are, no matter how many guests.
Right.
Ours is more customized for the type of menu you want to serve and your guest count. And I always tell people for our contracts to aim low so that you don't get stuck with a larger food and beverage minimum than you end up being able to spend. So if you think 150 is your max guest count, you might go under contract for 100 guests. And then that way your food and beverage minimum has been set at 100 guests times $50 as opposed to 150 guests times $50.
Right. Meaning then, if you end up with extra people, right. they're happy to add on, but always. Catering companies are not so happy to take off.
Exactly.
One thing that I worked with you guys at the wedding that we did together, the bride saw your packages, and Food Glorious Food has a lot of packages where within each thing, like she did food station. So it was like, you could do a carving station. Mm-hmm. Within that category, you could carve this meat, or this meat. And she saw everything, and she saw a lot of what she liked, but it was from various mm-hmm. different packages. And ultimately, it was a January wedding, and what they wanted to do was kind of a holiday dinner, Thanksgiving inspired. And I think you pretty much scrapped the packages altogether. So a lot of people don't, like, I think they see packages online, and they think, like, that's boring wedding food. It's just chicken with your choice of a starch and your choice of a veggie.
Right.
Nothing about this inspires me, even though I've heard really good things about this food. So, like, how is it easy for you doing it with them to come up with ideas about what kind of lights their fire?
Yeah, I mean, the food stations, for example, all, because we don't, I know you were saying packages, but everything is kind of, it's not like, here's your wedding package A.
Menus.
Yeah, so we have menus for chef stations, menus for the buffet, menus for the plated dinner, but none of those have to be set in stone in any way, shape, or form. So you might like the beef from this station, and you want the starch from this buffet, and you want the vegetable from this plate of dinner all onto your little plate. So anything can be mixed and matched from here to there to everywhere. And then we have a lot of people, kind of like your clients who did the kind of a themed menu. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of couples who, you know, want something that rings to their history together. So it might be, I had a Vietnamese bride and a Puerto Rican groom. So there was one station that was Vietnamese food, one station that was Puerto Rican food, and then another station that was, you know, sliders and American food.
Did they have specifics within mm-hmm. there? Like, we definitely need spring rolls. And
yes.
You were like, great, and we've done those, and this is how we did
it. Yes, and our executive chef was with the Four Seasons in Maui, Singapore, and Nevis. And so he's, you know, kind of been all over the world to be able to, you know, customize all sorts of different taste profiles. But even not going that extreme, you know, somebody wants the mac and cheese instead of the grits with their pecan crusted chicken. Okay.
Right. That's, like, easy enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, but I, you know, usually most of the conversations I end up having, with the Deck on Dragon weddings that are a little bit more casual and out of the box, is they just want to be sure that there's enough good food. Like, how do I know how much food to have?
Right.
Like, if I'm doing stations, is one station enough? Is five stations? I mean, and so that's a lot of the conversations that I get into at Deck, more so than when I'm just the caterer off premise. They really want to dive more into menu creation and meeting with the chef and
right.
And
that part is fun for couples, I think. Is it fun for caterers?
Yeah, it can be. Yes and no. I think having realistic expectations, sometimes you're, like we said, your venue dictates a lot of it. So if we're at our staff is they're experts at going into logistically challenging locations and still executing, you know, 5-course plated dinner.
Service, yeah.
You know, we bring ovens, we cook it all on site. Not every caterer is going to do that. But even saying that they're experts, there are sometimes that the chef will say that type of fish will not hold up if we're out in the middle of a pumpkin patch with no power.
Right.
And so, you know, listening to the experts and when they tell you this works, this doesn't
work. So if you're a couple, there's a reason. Caterer's not just going to arbitrarily be like, nope, we're not serving that.
Right.
There's a reason. And you can ask why and listen to the reason, but trusting your vendor on this one.
Well, and the other thing I've seen a lot of is since the Pinterest age.
Sure.
People
when weddings change
forevermore.
When weddings change
forever, you see such cute little
bites
and things. And
spoons.
Yes. And that may be for a wedding of 50 people.
Sure.
And to do it for your wedding of 400 is going to... Those little tiny things take a lot of
space
and work.
Right.
And so the cost that goes into those really intricate things that you've seen on Pinterest, the more guests you have, the more it's
Yeah, we're talking about like a tiny spoon that might have polenta and one slice of a cherry tomato and one blue cheese crumble and a, you know, basil sprig.
And the spoon has a ribbon that has the names of the couple and the date. And
Can be a lot. And keep in mind that with appetizers, first of all, wedding guests love appetizers.
True.
This is a just across the board. If you are cutting money anywhere and you're having a cocktail hour, I never suggest cutting the past apps from a cocktail hour for a lot of reasons. But they're fun. They're easy. It's usually like indulgent. And so
guests people in a good mood.
Yeah, guests are going to eat that. And
supposed to standing around complaining there's no food.
And they're just, they're tasty. So don't cut that part. But if it's a lot of small things, the caterer, whether they're cooking it there or somewhere else, needs a very big flat surface to lay everything out before the staff members put it on trays. And there's almost no way around that. And I've seen caterers having to improvise in like offices, moving people's stuff off their desks.
Yep.
To get a flat surface that is not the floor. So one thing to check with venues, and I can think of two venues offhand here that have extremely small kitchens for their catering to work in, and they aren't huge venues. They only fit 100 people, but a 10 by 10 space that they call a catering kitchen, you might be the one that has to rent the 6-foot tables to go in there, and also to let your caterer know if they're off premise that this is how much room you have to work with. And either yes or no, we can go outside also, but maybe we need a tent or there has to be a generator. So there's a lot of things to think about when the space doesn't lend itself to a large catering
area. All of that is incredibly true, and not just for the prep of the food, but you've got china, silver, glassware for these 100 guests.
When they're dirty, they stack up. Yeah.
And so you need an area to collect the dirty dishes, you know, scrape it off into the food, into the trash, and then the crates and the racks that they all came in are also going to be stored back there somewhere during the event.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just the space issues that not all venues that were built to be event venues, they've kind of been converted. They don't always think of.
Yeah. So,
and your band has stuff to store back there as well. And your florist and storage
and
is always a
videographer is like, where can I put this tripod? So the storage and, kind of a room, this is off topic, but you should know this, a room where vendors can just put their shit. You can call it a green room or like this is where the vendors are going to eat. Something more than a coat closet. I alone as a wedding planner come with a giant emergency kit, not to mention all the boxes of stuff that you, the bride, gave me. And then I have to put the boxes somewhere. So looking at a venue when you're on that first venue tour for those kind of extra rooms, if they have them and they present them to you, that means they've been asked these questions before and they know you're going to ask that because that's just a great question. But back to appetizers.
Yes.
I wanted to know what some of your favorites are or what you would consider the most like crowd-pleasing apps, because I swear to God that little pigs in a blanket, and I know that that's like the most like, you know, trashy kind of, like my kids call it garbage food, but we love it so much. People do not turn down pigs in a blanket. People do not turn down stuff wrapped in bacon.
I was gonna say, anything with bacon.
Okay.
Anything with bacon. Pepper jack stuffed chicken wrapped in bacon is probably our most popular.
People hear cheese and bacon. It's on a toothpick, and they go.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I also think that hors d'oeuvres is a place that brides and grooms can do something a little more creative. Hors d'oeuvres and or late night pass. You know, it's something to get. Like, I've had people... was it Texas Tech, maybe, that did the gut pack, which is Google it. It's like a bag of Frito-Lay chips that you put chili in and cheese, and you eat it out of the bag.
That sounds amazing.
They had us pass those because they both, I think it was...
Not on the way out, like while the party was still going.
Yeah, like during cocktail hour. Because I want to say it was either Texas Tech or Baylor.
Oh, during cocktail hour. Okay, so not an end of the night
thing. This was... Because of so many of their guests, you know, they all went to the college together, and this was their food. And passed it with little... bottles of the Dr. Pepper, the Dublin Dr. Pepper that has the real sugar cane.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's very specific.
Yes, they did. You know, we do a lot of, like, we have these tiny little mini Patron tequila bottles that we have drilled holes in the cork and put a straw in, and so fill those with margaritas and pass them with your lobster taco or your, your Tex-Mex thing.
That's something you might see on Pinterest that's totally doable, and we... For a price. I mean, they're drilling holes in tiny bottles. But the point is that apps or cocktail food or end-of-night food is a place to get kind of creative and fun. And like,
especially if they're doing a really formal plated dinner, they might do something that's really the food that they like. You know, mac and cheese bites. Yeah. And I usually tell, I always recommend at least one vegetarian, one chicken or pork, one beef or seafood. You can, of course, have more than that, but... at least that variety. Mm-hmm. And then some people really start thinking about, you know, the time of year. Do I want hot hors d'oeuvres? Do I want all cold or room temperature? So, I mean, there's so many.
Yeah. And one note is that those little soup shots with like grilled like tomato soup with grilled cheese, I love that. But it, I think it generally is not that successful because the soup is lukewarm or cold by the time it gets to most people, unless it's like your group of aunts that are standing right by the door that the caterer is coming out of to get the hot soup. So I think those are really lovely. But if you are serving them because you just actually really like soup, I would include it in your entree rather than little shots pass because they get cold so fast. And then another note with soup is that, because I just said you should do it with your entree, scratch that advice if you are having a 400 count wedding. Because even the best caterer, some of the soup is going to be cold, and you know that that's a weird detail that your guests that got the cold soup are going to remember.
We had a 400-person wedding that had soup as the first course, and so what they did is rent silver pitchers. So we came out and actually
poured it. That's
a
good idea.
The bowls had pine nuts or something like you know, decorations in the bowl, and then we poured the soup over it. But, I mean, but that... was a very, you know, expensive. They had to rent. And, you know, the silver pitchers don't hold. I mean, they hold enough soup for, like, three people.
And one server going back and forth is only going to get four.
So then it just takes more staff and more rentals.
But it's hot soup, baby, and that's what you wanted.
It is.
And also, you just mentioned a veggie, a beef, a chicken. We were talking about the apps. But, of course, if you're planning your main menu, if it's stations, you just have options for people. But if it's plated and you've ordered it, most of the time you will have asked your guests in their invitation, do you want the beef or the chicken? And the vegetarian's almost always an option with every caterer, and they'll give a couple over what is ordered. But I wanted to note that if you're doing stations and you have like ravioli, this one that I did with you, there was like a butternut squash and brown butter, but it was the only vegetarian entree. And I would say that every guest there got some of that ravioli because it smelled so amazing. And they're like, oh, I want a little chicken. I want a little beef. I want some of that ravioli. But we ran out of ravioli because they had two, against what I told them, basically ordered it for a quarter of the guests thinking, well, this is the vegetarian dish. So only the vegetarians are going to order it. And they had several in their wedding party that they knew were vegetarians. But when it's something delicious like mac and cheese or... loaded mashed potatoes, something that everybody wants, don't assume that only the vegetarians are going to go for it.
Well, any of the, any stations or self-serve or, you know, self-serve buffets where you can't really control who takes it and how much, I would do full counts because everybody's going to want some of everything as opposed to a plated dinner where...
The vegetarian entree might look great, but you already ordered your fish, and that's what's in front of you.
And I do have people that, if they know, you know, I have two gluten-free or I have two vegetarians, and they don't want to do a different entree on the floor for them.
Right.
We can just have plates in the back that they ask their servers for, and then that way they're not, you know, doing a, you know, they have 100 guests, they only do 25 servings of the vegetarian entree, and then they run out. This way they've got it in the back for the actual vegetarians.
Right. And a wedding planner would help the caterer know, like, oh, that's the blonde lady at table five, position six. Right. Because I know that because I'm your wedding planner and you told me she's gluten-free or whatever.
Yeah. Well, now, and I will say, though, that another place to maybe work on your budget is with those hors d'oeuvres, because we price ours per piece. So you can decide, I want 2 pieces per person, 3 pieces per person, 4 pieces per person. And if you look at the budget with 4 pieces per person and it's a place to cut, could go down to 2 pieces per person, but still... have that quantity, or excuse me, the variety.
Right.
So it might be 50 of 4 different flavors for your 200 guests. And so it looks like more is going around because there's more variety, but you've cut down the quantity, which has gotten the overall price down.
Yeah, I think that's a better bet. Also, because then, you know, you as the bride and groom or groom and groom, whatever, you're going to have a little plate made for you. You might be taking photos during this time or just like, I sometimes tell my guests or my couples, even if they don't have to take photos afterwards, just to enjoy like 10 minutes after your ceremony together and kind of take a deep breath. But that's when you can try your hors d'oeuvres that you've decided on, because you're the only one that's tasted them. You decided you wanted these 4. So that's more satisfying and more fun than just having 2. So big fan of appetizers over here.
Yes.
Okay, I think the last...
And that gives me something to snack on in the kitchen when I'm walking
Me too, at the end of the night especially, whatever's left over on those small bites.
I always stand in the kitchen and say, I hate it when parties don't have cheese displays, because I don't have the cheese to snack on.
I too love a good cheese display.
Lord, I know.
Okay, 2 last questions. One is, what is one thing, and there are many things for some couples... One thing that couples do that just makes life, like, and this is, let's say, after the decisions have been made, not during the planning process, but in the week of the wedding and on the wedding day, like, what do couples do that you wish they didn't, or that makes, it goes against, it's counterproductive, and it is just annoying or difficult for vendors, like, that makes your life harder unnecessarily? If only they knew.
If only they knew. So many answers running in my head. I would say we care about your event. We really, really, really do. However, there might be 50 events in the months leading up to yours. So if we are not able to get back to you the same day because your event is 6 months from now and I'm having to deal with the wedding that's happening tomorrow. Don't take it personally or feel neglected or get mad. Or just recognize that from the venue and the caterer's point of view, we don't actually need all of your information until we're about 2 weeks out.
Right.
Because that, you know, until chef places the order for the food and, you know, we finalize the floor plan and the timeline, which usually happens 21 days to 30 days out, no offense to you and your wonderful wedding, but you're not at the top of our thoughts. So, and I feel horrible when people get get offended that we don't have the time right now to dive into all of their detailed planning. So I would say the understanding and the patience of how the event industry calendar works. And then a comma to have that one point person that is sending you the emails and the phone calls.
Right.
Who is the actual decision maker? Because if you've got a mom and a groom and a groom and a bride and a dad and somebody is paying for one thing and somebody else is paying for another thing and they...
There's more room for error when there's too many cooks in the kitchen. It's on my contract as a planner to have one decision maker because I, you know, the mom might be paying for everything, but the bride is who I'm in contact with. But for a caterer like Beth, when in one day she might get 6 emails regarding the bar for one wedding.
Right.
So it's like, scratch that. Nope. Okay, change that. Nope. We just did that. Now we're going to take that decision back because we're going to do this. And so by the 6th change,
it is
a little bit confusing and a little bit muddled. And then on the wedding day, something didn't happen precisely the way you wanted it to because it was a confusing process. So streamlining and prioritizing.
Well, and that's another good, you know, reason to wait until your 30 days out because you have already gone through the process of changing your mind multiple times and didn't send me 15 emails about that one mind change. You've made your decision by the time we sit down 30 days out.
Yeah, so keep some notes, scratch out on your own notes, but then make final decisions or what you call final decisions that might need some tweaking, you know, even a week before. But once you've hired, once you've, you have a contract with your venue, you've hired your caterer, and you've set your basic menu, that's enough. And you can kind of back off of that while you focus on all your other planning and your guest count comes in. I have a wedding in 2 weeks and a guest, one of the groom's friends just died. And so it was like, oh, our floor plan is totally set. And then the bride emailed me and said, my husband's friend died, so we're going to have to take one of the chairs off of table six. And it was such a weird, like, logistic thing to think about, but it's still 2 weeks away. So it was, you know, like, okay, that's, of course, my gosh, let's deal with that. But had she emailed me 25 times ahead of this tragedy to talk about floor plans, then it would have, I would have had to go through back every, back through everything just to make sure I was doing it right. So there's a time for decision making. There's a time to kind of back off and let things just sit. And then a couple weeks before your wedding, you jump back in, you contact everyone.
I always tell people that you're going to go to other events, other restaurants, other weddings in those 6 to 8 months and see food that you hadn't thought about and decide that you, now I want this instead of this. Or my friend served the exact same thing I was going to serve, so I can't anymore. And so,
or we want like tiered platters for the cookie buffet instead of flat whatever that we had planned. Things that are totally doable, but maybe make, be pretty clear on your decisions before you contact your vendors to change things.
Yes.
So that it's not a multi-email
change. I always try to communicate over email so I can go back and look as opposed to phone calls. Because I just, that is too easy to get, I've written down the wrong thing, or you can't prove what somebody said and didn't say.
Oh, yeah.
I had to do that at a holiday party this past weekend when they thought that they had ordered one type of bar package.
You had to look through the emails.
I walked out with my laptop and showed them the email that said, this is what you ordered.
Yeah. And that's like insurance for everyone, and it saves problems
and insurance
down
for the client, too, because if there had been an email with proving them right, then it's on me.
And then the last thing I wanted to ask about was tipping. And I give my clients a tipping etiquette recommendation form that very clearly states that tipping is totally up to you. It's not obligatory. It's nice. Vendors appreciate it, blah, blah, blah. But it also includes a note about catering specifically, because a lot of times something like gratuity might be included in the package, but that's a little bit different than handing every server a $20 bill at the end of the night. And sometimes with catering, they give it, my clients will give a full envelope full of 20s for every back of house and front of house staff member, and they'll give it to you. And then you distribute. Sometimes they want to give out the money themselves, or if they have a smaller catering staff, they might just give me, the planner, money to then distribute, which I actually love doing because it feels like I get to be like the bearer of good news, and it's not even my money. But it is my recommendation that brides and grooms and couples do tip. So what's your take on that, or like the easiest way to just include it?
I will first say that we never expect it, ever. That's just, I mean, without saying. And the gratuity, or we call it the service charge, which is 21% of what you spend in food and beverage, that is not a tip for us. That is paying the hourly rate of those people. So there is no tip included in any of our pricing that you're paying to Food Glory Suite or Deck. It is completely 100% up to you. What I see most often is tipping the event manager. And then we have a bridal attendant who keeps the couple in, or, you know, a wedding attendant.
Some people call it a butler.
That, you know, keeps them in food and drink all night long, bustles dresses, and, you know, helps corral. And so I see her being tipped, the event manager. If we do not allow our bartenders to put tip jars out. And so, but sometimes guests even, you know, just have connected with a bartender and slip them something. It's, I only see tipping of the full staff, If we're in somebody's home.
Interesting.
And they, you know, and so it's a, you know, they, it's been a little bit more personal and one-on-one, and they've kind of had a conversation with the homeowner, and we were invited into your home, and, you know,
interesting.
Or some of these larger ranch wedding kind of things that have a planner.
When everybody's going out there.
Yes.
Because I definitely say, like, $20 per front of house staff member is just a really nice treat at the end of the night, but I also include bartenders, bussers, you know. My clients will say, like, how many chefs are there? Because you guys break it down.
And they will give to, they will come out to the back of the house, to the kitchen, and hand chef something specific also.
Okay.
So, I mean, I, for ease-wise, you know, giving an envelope of the money to me, and we'll, you know, distribute it. Or I do have people that will have me charge their credit card after the event. And then we can divide it up in their paychecks.
Okay. So that's something that's good to know. That makes it one more step for you afterwards, but it's... They get a little bonus.
Right. Or sometimes we, you know, we'll even get things in the mail, or they, I actually have somebody coming by today, an event planner, bringing by an envelope to give to the people, and the event was like a month ago.
That's awesome. So it can definitely be done retroactively, which I have gotten, I've gotten tips before in thank you notes. But if a client does give you $1,000 and say, please distribute this to everyone who worked on it, do you consider that the people who were on site, or do you also give to, like, the guy who loaded up the truck?
Well, he would be on, because our stewards, our truck drivers are on site.
Oh, okay. So everyone that works on the
event. Yeah, the back, the kitchen staff that would have been here prepping the food, it wouldn't necessarily go to them. But everybody that was actually at the wedding itself.
Okay. Yeah. So that's good to know. So when you see your breakdown and you see service charge and tax, or tax plus gratuity, and it's a percentage that is not necessarily a tip, but as we both said, nobody expects a tip. Mm-hmm. It's always a nice surprise. And another thing I've told couples before is that if you don't want to tip everyone, and of course it's your discretion, but you might want to just have some 20s in your pocket, groom or father, somebody mm-hmm. that has a pocket, because you might see a staff member that is literally going above and beyond, like cleaning
up
something that one of your guests, you know, like something that's just like, oh. Or, you know, that runs to a different station to get fresh French fries for the kid who wanted it at table five but didn't, you know.
Yeah, no, that is so true. This is a horrible story. We were at a venue that was not one of our venues. It was a venue that had a catering list, but there was no on-site venue person. So we were the venue. And a rat ran across.
Oh, my God.
The venue, like... in the venue, and our event manager caught it and took it out.
Wait, how did they catch it? Like, they threw a pot over it or something?
But like, and tried to do it as subtle as possible. And so the client was like, tip, 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 tip.
Yeah, oh
like,
my
I mean, obviously
God.
It was the venue issue, not the caterer issue, but he, who else is going to handle it? I mean, you're not going to have your, your
and
client.
Yes.
So,
And we've had other, I mean, there are other horrific stories that caterers just
that
by default have to deal with. Like,
they do. The toilets.
Yeah, a bathroom, like, explosion. And you're like, we only have the one bathroom.
And you're like,
it's like, somebody has to, I mean.
I know.
Poor,
I know. Poor everyone.
So having some money is always nice, just in case. But again, thank you notes are always helpful.
I agree.
So
just
I guess.
Appreciation.
That's it.
Yay!
I mean, I'm so glad that we did this. And I, like I said, I'll include links to Food Glorious Food and then the venues that you help with or are contracted with. And Food Glorious Food and Beth are based here in Dallas. They would love to work with any of our listeners. And thank you, as always. You can hit us up on Gmail, thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com, Twitter, TBWP podcast. We will have Instagram soon and get our episodes from iTunes or our website. Tell your friends. And if you want to make Michelle very, very happy, leave a review on the iTunes site for us. So thank you, Beth, again.
Thank you for having me.
And I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.